Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, very excited to have another first-time guest here on the show, breaking down his most recent two-round mock draft, what he saw at the Combine, how he feels about the Combine, and how it comes when with regards to impacting evaluation of players, someone whose work I have really enjoyed reading over the past few months as he's joined ESPN. It is ESPN's draft analyst, Jordan Reed. Jordan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Bill, it's a pleasure being here, and the first time is always the best time, so it's always a pleasure coming on with you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited. Like I said, I really enjoyed reading your work as you moved over to ESPN, and there's obviously such a fascinating draft here in so many ways, and I think we didn't get a lot of stuff cleared up at the Combine, maybe relative to some years, but we're seeing a lot of people, you know, watching film closely. We're getting a lot of different insight into the players at the top of this draft. And I think it helps also that we have, you know, frankly, a very fantasy football friendly top 10. It's quarterbacks, it's wide receivers, some offensive tackles. You know, as much as I love the grind of like line of scrimmage stuff, it's more fun when you have three quarterbacks and a bunch of wide receivers as opposed to, you know, offensive tackles in the top 10. But I have to start with the beginning of your mock draft. And I don't think I'm spoiling it here, although this is insider content, but we're both behind the ESPN Plus paywall. I can share a little bit here, I think. In the top three, you have Caleb Williams going one, Drake May going two to Washington, and Jaden Daniels going three to the New England Patriots. And that seems to be the most popular order of these guys. I have seen some folks, I know Nate Tice, my friend who writes for Yahoo, who I think does great work covering quarterbacks and covering the NFL as a whole, has Drake May higher. I've seen people who have Jaden Daniels higher. So just from your perspective, just starting with those big three guys, I want to get a sense of how you view them relative to one another. For you, is it just, you know, they're kind of in their own tier, and then just, you know, you have them sorted by maybe smaller differences? Do you feel like Caleb is in a tier of his own, and then May and Daniels are two and three? How do you feel about those three quarterbacks at the top of the draft?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating group, Bill, and I think you hit the nail on the head as far as it's always easier for outside people looking in when it's a quarterback driven draft as opposed to offensive linemen or wide receivers in that sense. And even though I compare offensive linemen in the draft to getting socks and underwear at Christmas, even though you don't enjoy it, you always appreciate it at the end of the day because you're going to need it. And you notice when you don't have it. But with these quarterbacks, it's a really, really interesting group. And I'll just start with Caleb Williams of USC. And I think Caleb is really special. I mean, you talk about the way that the game is trending as far as from everybody loves his improvisational skills, the off-script ability. I call it sandlot football. Those highlight plays, everybody loves that about Caleb. But he does have to get better in structure. But something we have to understand about Caleb is that his defense was giving up 35 to 40 plus points a game. So what happened, just putting myself in his shoes, he had a Superman cape on all the time. So what happens is it gets an overdrive and it stays on. The setting stays on with the Superman cape on. So what you're seeing a lot of times is him holding the ball just because he was pressing to make so many plays, just because he knew that he had to shoulder the load so much. So if you never watched Caleb Williams and you come in on the back end watching him, you know, in December, January, you catch up on his film and you're like, man, this dude just plays outside the pocket. He improvisates everything that he does when his game is not really like that. And I would encourage everybody to go back to and watch him during his last season or his only season at Oklahoma before he transferred. And then back in 2022, which was his Heisman season, he was much better in structure just because they had a better overall team. And then he had some better weapons. You know, Jordan Addison, who ended up being a first round pick of the Vikings, they had a really good connection back in 2022. And he had some good weapons at Oklahoma too. So as far as an NFL style of offense, I think he operated in more so in at Oklahoma and then his first year at USC. And yes, the coach are the same, but just talking about the surroundings and then some of the concepts that they were running, it was a little bit different than last season just because they were trying to overcompensate, just because they just didn't have that same amount of talent And then their defense was absolutely awful last year too. So Lincoln Riley left Caleb out to dry a lot of times, you know, not giving them no checkdowns. Everything was just home run ball or Caleb just figure it out after that. So if you're just looking at Caleb from last season, that's really the picture that's going to be painted with him. And I think it's kind of a false sense just because, once again, he kept that Superman cape on all the time. And then with Drake May, I'm a big fan of Drake. He's actually my second ranked quarterback. I have him ahead of Daniels. And he's another that didn't have that big year like everybody was expecting. Coming into the year, everybody said that Caleb and Drake will be battling back and forth to be the number one overall pick. But now I think it's a foregone conclusion. I still see Caleb as being that number one guy right now. And I'll be shocked if the Bears don't take him at the top of the draft. But with Drake, he's another that didn't have a whole bunch of weapons around him. You know, he lost Josh Downs this year, and then he didn't get Tez Walker until midway through the season after he got over the NCAA stuff that was going on. And then he was going through a new offensive coordinator this year, too. Chip Lindsey came over from Central Florida, so he was learning a new scheme after Phil Longo left to go to Wisconsin. So what you see a lot of times with Drake is that he's taking these drops, and then the routes don't marry up with what he's trying to do. So sometimes he's late, sometimes he's patting the ball, and then there's some other times of where he just simply makes bad decisions just because there were so many things of where he was trying to overcompensate. But what's so maddening about Drake and what frustrates you so much is that he'll throw a 60-yard bomb that is one of the best passes that you'll ever see. And then the next play, the very next series, he'll come back and he'll just throw a simple route right in the dirt or at the cleats of a wide receiver. And you're like, man, like, how is that possible? So I think a lot of his flaws really centers around his poor footwork, but a lot of his flaws are correctable on the next level with NFL coaching. And I mean, you've heard the comps, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, all those guys. He definitely is the prototype at the position. So what you're trusting with Drake is that he already has those traits walking through the door. But similar to Josh Allen and also Justin Herbert, once we get him outside of the scheme that he's playing in and try to correct some of those accuracy and decision-making flaws that he has, now you're talking about somebody that potentially could be a top 10 type of quarterback eventually. And then every year there's a quarterback that comes out of nowhere, and that was Jaden Daniels this year. Everybody, I mean, myself included, had a day three grade on him coming into the season. And this year, everything just seemed to click for him. And we've seen this with guys in years past. Joe Burrow is a great example of things eventually clicking for him. And that's exactly what happened with Jaden. Now, Jaden is a little bit slender. He's about 6'4", listed at 215 pounds. We'll see what he does weigh in at LSU's Pro Day since he opted not to weigh in at the combine. So that will be a big talking point about Jaden as far as his frame, just how much does he weigh. But the mobility, the arm talent, and then just the accuracy. I mean, he was phenomenal last year. Everything just clicked for him, but the mobility is what is so intriguing about Jaden, just because it raises such a high floor for a player when he's walking through the door as far as that mobility, just because you can use that mobility while the mental hurdle of the game catches up, while he catches up to the mental hurdle of the game on the NFL level. And once again, the NFL is trending more towards those mobile type of quarterbacks, and everything's not going to be perfect in the NFL from a play calling standpoint. And then of course the defensive players that you're playing against, they're very athletic too. So you have to have those quarterbacks that can make offensive coordinators right, even though they're in the wrong play. And that's what happened a lot with Jaden. I mean, you can go watch the Alabama game before he got hurt in the third quarter. He was great, had over 400 total yards in that one. But the Florida game is the one that I come to of where he was just absolutely phenomenal. So the big thing with Jaden that he has to work on is that he didn't operate over the middle of the field a whole bunch, just because having Nabers and Brian Thomas, who were two first round wide receivers, they really operated on the perimeter a whole bunch. And then also he has to learn to protect himself a lot too. I'm sure you've watched the film. You've seen plenty of clips on Twitter of where he just throws his body into some crazy situations, and he's already not a big guy. So he has to learn how to protect himself. But I still have it stacked Williams, May, Daniels right now. You know, things can change. We still have a long way to go until the draft comes, but that's how I have the order stacked right now.
You get a lot of really fascinating stuff there. We could do a whole podcast on just those three guys. Obviously so much to say there. One thing you mentioned that I think is a really interesting kind of theory question, and I want to know what you think about this as an evaluator. You know, we do see a lot of players have their best season in their final year before school and before they leave school. And you know, if you're going to be in early, if you're going to leave school early, it makes sense. You're going to leave. That's like a selection bias there, where you're only going to leave if you typically have a good year in your final year, if you're going to be leaving early. But I guess I wonder from your perspective, is it important for a player to have their best season, their final year? Like, do you need to see that sort of steady incremental improvement? Because at the top three, we have two players who, you know, you mentioned for reasons probably outside of their control, maybe weren't as great in 2023 as you would have hoped, or weren't, you know, maybe the players that we think they can be, you know, with more help around them. And then with Daniels, it was a totally different sort of path, where he was not seen as, like you said, he was seen as a day three pick, and then suddenly, boom, he makes a huge rise forward in his final year. Like how much more difficult, I guess, is it to evaluate players who have those sort of atypical paths versus someone who, you know, gets on the field, is good, a little better the next year, a little better the next year. Like, you know, how much more variance do you think that enters into the equation?
That's a really interesting question, just because I think the hardest part about quarterback evaluations is separating them from their environment and just
Yep, for
evaluating
sure.
the traits. And this is something that Jordan Love taught me when he was coming out of Utah State. And if you remember, I believe that was the 2020 draft, if I'm not mistaken. What happened with Jordan Love is that he had a huge junior season, and everybody was so excited about him heading into his last season at Utah State, and he just didn't look like the same guy from an accuracy standpoint. But once again, you have to separate them from their environment and understand, like, what are your non-negotiables when you're talking about quarterbacks? For me, it's the decision making and then also the accuracy. And I think kind of an old saying with quarterbacks, and I used to believe this, and that accuracy isn't improvable. And I'm sure this is something that you've heard a million times, even when you were coming up as a journalist and a writer. If you don't have accuracy, you're never going to have it. And Jordan Love and Josh Allen taught me a great lesson about that, and that a lot of times accuracy in college can be flawed by offenses that they're running, just because these quarterbacks are trying to get the ball out so quickly. And college offenses are more so about how fast I can go and how many points I can score in as little bit of time. A lot of times it speeds up the game for the quarterback, but also it speeds up their body and their mannerisms, and it creates bad habits too. So a lot of times what you saw with Josh Allen and Jordan Love is that they're so focused on getting the ball out so quickly, they don't really care about how their body is fixated or their body positioning. But once again, that creates bad habits. But is college coaching, or excuse me, is NFL coaching able to create or able to eliminate some of those bad habits that they have and create new ones to help improve their accuracy? So I think it's more so of where you have to take the quarterbacks away from their environment and just evaluate what they're putting on tape. And the things that they're putting on tape, are those things correctable with proper NFL coaching?
Yeah, and that, I guess, is the other variable here that we don't talk about a ton, but is so incredibly important, is ending up in the right place. I remember, you know, the Patrick Mahomes draft. Like, there were reports before the draft that he teams saw him as a third round pick. Not everyone, obviously. There were definitely teams who saw him as a first round pick, but I mean, not that Patrick Mahomes is not an incredible player, because of course he is, but ending up with Andy Reid, having the year to play behind Alex Smith, you know, not being thrown into the fire with bad weapons and having bad habits instilled, that made a difference. That's such a it's such an incredibly important thing, and such an important thing to think about when we're evaluating evaluators, when we're evaluating players. I mean, it is such a that sort of winning that lottery for a player is so important, and totally out of their control, sadly.
Yeah, it is. And for quarterbacks, a lot of times it's better to go in the back end of the first round as opposed to the first part of it, just because 9 times out of 10, you're going to be entering a better situation. And now there's some rare instances of where teams have a perfect setup or really good infrastructure for a quarterback to walk into, but sometimes there isn't a great one. And great examples of that this year, like New England, is not a great situation to enter into
No
right now. And
question.
yes, they have $100 million in cap space. But you look at the weapons, you look at the offensive line, it's just not great right now. But I compare that to somewhere like Minnesota. Minnesota has Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, and they have a pretty good play caller, in my opinion, and Kevin O'Connell. So you look at the infrastructure and the setup of some teams, and I think you're spot on as far as it matters a lot where these quarterbacks end up.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a Jet's Pizza location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
4, 5, 6. You make this so easy with your mock draft. Like, everyone's in like a nice little, it's really easy to be like, okay, we can compare these players. 4, 5, 6, 3 wide receivers coming off the board for you with a trade. And I love a mock draft that has a trade. So thank you. Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals at 4, Malik Nabers to the Bears at 5, trading up with the Chargers, and then Rome Odunze going to the Giants at 6. So want to ask you kind of a similar question about these three players. Is this how you see them in terms of their pure talent? Do you see Marvin Harrison in his own tier and then Nabers and Odunze behind? Do you see Harrison and Nabers kind of in a tier and Odunze a step behind? Are they all together? Do you feel like with different teams, you put Odunze ahead of Nabers? How do you feel about these top three wide receivers?
This is the toughest part about stacking these guys or building a draft board in general from a media perspective, Bill, just because we're not running a scheme. So, right. You know, for teams like the Dolphins or the 49ers that value yards after the catch, they're going to love Malik Nabers. Like, he's probably going to be the bona fide number one wide receiver for them. But for other teams that value more so of those just get open and understand how to catch the ball in the air, they're going to value Marvin and then also Odunze a little bit better just because they have a wider catch radius and a little bit more natural route runners than what Nabers is right now. But for me, I have Marvin on his own tier right now, and he's my top player overall in the draft regardless of position just because I love Marvin, man. Like, he's everything that you want in a true wide receiver one. And you can list the names of the wide receivers that we've seen come out of college and be the best of this century, whether it's Calvin Johnson, Ja'Marr Chase, Julio Jones, AJ Green. I think Marvin is on that similar tier as all of those guys, just because it's just rare for a 6'4", 205-pound receiver to be so nuanced and polished as he is. He can run any branch on the route tree that you want. He has excellent hand-eye coordination. And this is something that Chase and then also Justin Jefferson taught me in evaluations. You have to be able to make competitive catches. I think that's something that they excel at, just because you're not always going to be able to create natural separation just because DBs are really good in the NFL. So can you make those crowded catches in those contested situations? And Marvin excels in those areas. But I think what is so special about Marvin and what and why I put him on that elite tier is that Ohio State had very subpar quarterback play last year, and everybody in the stadium knew where Ohio State was going to go with the ball each and every week, and he still was able to produce. So that is a sign of a receiver that can withstand his elements, and I think that's something that's going to be able to translate on the next level. And, you know, I like Kyler Murray as a quarterback, and not saying he's going to a poor situation in Arizona. I think Kyler's a really good quarterback, but even if, let's say, they move on from a quarterback or if he has to play with a bridge guy or anything like that, I still think Marvin would be an elite type of wide receiver. I think he can be a top 10 guy right away in year one. So he's on his own tier for me, but I mean, I love Nabers too. Nabers is number two for me. He reminds me a lot of DJ Moore when he was coming out of Maryland. And I think he has a very similar skill set to just an electrifying player, can gain yards after the catch, is a natural tackle breaker. I mean, you watch some of his film, it's like, what I wrote in my scouting report about him is that he plays with a fully charged battery every single catch. Like, he never wears down in games. So he's a really natural guy. And then also Rome Odunze, who a lot of people like as well. He's more so of your Keenan Allen type of receiver that's just really fluid, really polished, can wake up out of his sleep and run routes right away. So really good catch radius too. But I don't think you can go wrong with any three of these guys. I think they're in their own bucket as far as at the top of the draft. But this is a really good wide receiver class overall. But those three are just different.
I actually want to ask you about the bottom half of the first round as well, because you have wide receivers there as well. You have Adonai Mitchell going 28 to the Bills, Brian Thomas going 30 to the Ravens, and then Xavier Worthy going 30 to the Chiefs. And unsurprisingly, after the combine, I want to talk to you about Xavier Worthy, who ran 4.21. Is that correct?
Yeah, he
At
did.
the combine, NFL record 4.21. So that's, I think, the fascinating question to me about the combine, which obviously it exists for a reason. The numbers exist for a reason. But I wonder, from your perspective, is he a first rounder for you because of what he did at the combine? Because he's only 32. I mean, he very easily could have been a second rounder, in that range. So from your perspective, how much did Xavier Worthy help himself by running a 4.21 at the combine? Does it move him up like a half round, a full round? Does it not make a difference for you because the tape supports him being a first rounder? Like, how do you weigh the combination of Xavier Worthy's tape with the cold number of a crazy 4.21 at the combine?
Yeah, so I'll just describe like the environment when he ran it. So I'm sitting inside of Lucas Oil Stadium. They actually let fans inside of the combine this year, which I thought was phenomenal. And when you see him finish the actual 40, you can see him like pointing to the crowd and pumping them up, which I thought was awesome. So I always sit right at the 40-yard line. And I don't know if you've ever been inside of the stadium during the combine. So every when 40s are about to start and through their entirety, every single scout in there lines up literally on the 40-yard line, just sitting stacked over top of each other. So I'm in that muddle of people, and he's just absolutely flying. So I have my stopwatch too, and every single scout like turns to each other with their mouth wide open, like, "Did you get this time?" Because the first time he ran 4.25, and everybody thought that he was going to be done, just because that's what most prospects do whenever they run 4.2 or 4.3, they run a great time. They just say, "See you later. See you guys at Pro Day." I
Of
don't have anything
course.
else to prove, which I
Of
understand.
course.
So he surprisingly lined down, and you could tell that he wanted the record, and he goes out and he runs 4.21. So I'm sharing my time. I had a 4.19 on my stopwatch, and I'm like, "Did y'all get the time this fast?" And everybody, I'm seeing 4.20, 4.21, 4.22, and then we're looking up at the screen. So they have the telecast on the big screen at the top, the NFL Network, showing DJ and Rich Eisen. And they bring the simulcast up. He barely beats John Ross. And we're like, "Oh crap, he just set the record." So the environment was awesome. That's something I'll always remember. This was my fourth combine, so I'll never forget that. That's a lifetime memory. But just speaking on his draft stock, we knew Xavier Worthy was fast. Like, you can look at his tape and see that he was fast. So it really just confirmed what we already knew. Now, I wasn't expecting him to break John Ross's record. I'd be lying if I said that, but it really just confirmed what we already knew about him. So, I mean, I expect him to go in that 25 to 35 range still, which is where I had him in my mock draft, right at 32 to the Chiefs. I think that would be a great fit for him, especially with them recently releasing Marquez Valdez-Scantling. I think he could take over that type of role. So it would be fun seeing Patrick Mahomes try to overthrow him inside of Arrowhead Stadium. I think that would be really, really fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that has needed an injection of speed, even with MVS. Obviously is a still a fast player, but they could have used an injection of speed for a while now. They've won two Super Bowls. They don't need it that badly, I guess,
Not
but
too much.
if you want, it wouldn't hurt, it wouldn't hurt. Obviously you want to have that to, at the very least create separation for your receivers underneath as well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The tackle class is interesting as well. Again, I think there's maybe a wider range of opinions from what I've seen on these guys. And you have a bigger gap here for your top three. You have Joe Alt going 7 to Tennessee, Olifashanu going 10 to the Jets, and then Amarius Mims drops all the way to 20 and the Steelers. And I love the fits here. I think three teams that should definitely be considering adding offensive line help and left tackle help in the big picture. But I guess I wonder, you know, from your perspective, is it Alt and Fashanu in one tier and then Mims kind of a step below, or did Mims just happen to fall? Like, how do you view Mims versus the top two tackles in this class?
Yeah, so I have it Alt and Fashanu in their own tier right now, just because once again, they're both guys that were just on another level last year. And just comparing those two guys, it really just depends on if you're willing to bet on upside, just because I think Olu has more upside. But if you're looking for the player, like if we had a game tomorrow, I would trust Joe Alt a little bit more, just because he's a typical plug and play guy and just forget about it for the next decade or so. And so during the season, Bill, I actually live scout games across the country, and I'm going and I'm seeing these prospects throughout the season. So I had an opportunity to see Joe Alt in person this year, and I can't describe like how big he was in person. Like, just standing beside him, he's a massive human being. Like, every bit of 6'9", 320 pounds. And you just say wow when you see him up close. But what I love about Joe Alt is that we're talking about somebody that was a tight end 3 years ago. So he came to Notre Dame and he converted from tight end to offensive tackle. And that's something that's very popular in college nowadays. And, you know, if you're not getting any playing time at tight end, or if you're just a massive tight end and you already have really good feet, let's go ahead and let's transition to offensive tackle and make some NFL money eventually when you get out of school in 3 or 4 years. And that's exactly what Joe Alt was able to do. And he reminds me a lot of Taylor Decker as well as Jake Matthews when they were coming out. Mm-hmm. Maybe not those guys that are going to crack, you know, that high end. They're not going to be Trent Williams, Tristan Wirfs. They're not going to be in that type of tier in the NFL. But that second tier, that B-level starter that you know is always going to be dependable, I think Joe Alt is definitely going to end up being that type of player. But on the inverse, Olu is a player that he's a phenomenal pass protector. Like, he's so nimble. He's very athletic. He's very strong as a pass protector already. But as a run blocker, he still has some improvement to do just because he's not very strong right now. So he's one of those players that's not going to impose his will. He's not going to, you know, lean and just mash people in the run game. That's not really his game. So right now, he just does what I like to call get in the way and run his feet. He doesn't really generate a lot of movement right now. But when I'm talking about when I'm grading offensive tackles, and if I was a GM, I always said that I would rather take the offensive tackle that's already a natural pass protector that I have to teach run blocking, as opposed to the inverse of somebody that's already a good run blocker but not a good pass protector, just because I think there's so many different mechanisms and details that go into being a pass protector that's so hard. Especially when you're moving backwards and somebody's coming full speed ahead at you, right ahead, as opposed to moving forward and run blocking and putting your weight on somebody else. So it really just depends on if you're willing to bet on upside as far as who you will want between those two. But the last player, Amarius Mims, who I think is one of the bigger wild cards in this draft, he's another player that I actually walked beside in the convention center. Another player that wowed me, just like Joe Alt. That's just a massive human being. But you're seeing this guy running low fives in the 40, which is phenomenal for his size. But he's only started 8 career games out of the 30 games that he's played in. So he hasn't been healthy. And that's the big question about him. Do I trust the upside over the durability concerns? Just because he's one of those players that 5 years from now, if you tell me that he's on his second team or if he's a top five tackle in the NFL, I would believe both sides of the spectrum. So once again, it just depends on, are you willing or are you confident enough to bank on him getting past the durability concerns and betting on the upside?
Yeah, so tough to evaluate from the outside. We don't have access to, you know, the medicals to an extent that a team does. So that could be a real differentiator. I mean, I know even on the NFL side, when if I'm looking at something projecting, oh, this guy is going to do really well in free agency, and then they sign a one-year deal, more often than not, if you go to a team and say, hey, why weren't you in the market for this guy? It's almost always, well, the medicals weren't as good as we were hoping, or that could be such a differentiator. So I don't envy you there from that perspective. This is a tough evaluation with Amarius Spence when it comes to his athleticism or to the ability whether we can stay healthy. But you're absolutely right about certain NFL players. I remember I went to Vikings camp, and Phil Loholt was there. And Phil Loholt was like a good right tackle with the Vikings for a long time. He's 6'8". And like I think the thing that people maybe don't realize here is if you're at camp, if you're at the draft, you're seeing a ton of other NFL players. Like, it's not like you're not seeing, like, it's like, you know, seeing one NFL player around civilians. Like, you're seeing every other person there is an actual NFL player. And then you're seeing one or two people who are just so big that even by NFL player standards, you're like, I didn't know a person could be that size.
Yeah.
Like, that was Phil Loholt to me. It was just like, I was speechless seeing Phil Loholt. And he was a great athlete as well, a very good NFL player before he suffered some injuries for, you know, later in his career with the Vikings. From your perspective, and I want to talk again about that kind of, you know, round one, round two, drop, you know, the gap there, because this is a 2-round mock draft you did for ESPN. Was there anyone who moved into the first round of the draft because of what they did at the combine, or any players who maybe fell off and dropped from round one to round two in your head as you were thinking about this mock draft based on what happened at the combine?
Well, one player that I think has helped himself a ton, well, two, I should say, is Quinyon Mitchell of Toledo. He's a cornerback from Toledo. He's one that a lot of scouts are just buzzing about right now. And there was a big question mark about him entering the Senior Bowl, just because whenever you talk about group of five players that are highly ranked, you're always a little bit hesitant to see how quickly they adjust to the speed of the game. And I thought he was the best player of any at the Senior Bowl, regardless of position. Like, he could have put on an Alabama or a Georgia helmet, you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference. You would have thought he went to one of those schools. So it's probably between him and Tyrion Arnold, who was a cornerback of Alabama, to be the first corner off the board. And I think either one of those guys could go as high as 12 to Denver, but I don't think either one of those guys are going to get outside of the Jaguars at 17, especially with them recently releasing Darius Williams. I don't see either one of those players getting past that point. But Quinyon Mitchell is somebody that's helped himself a ton. And then he goes out, he runs a 4.3 and jumps, I believe, 38 inches in the vertical at the combine. So he continued to help himself throughout this pre-draft process. And then another is Darius Robinson, who's a defensive lineman from Missouri. Another player that I stood beside at the Senior Bowl and just could not believe how big this dude was. And, you know, he has that chiseled frame that you love to see. He's already really good with his hands. And, you know, I got a little bit of pushback at putting him at 16 to the Seahawks. A lot of people, scouts that I talked to, thought that was a little bit high for him. But it's a fit that makes a lot of sense, just because with Mike McDonald now being the head coach there, he seems like a Baltimore Ravens Z type of player that I like to say. He fits the mold of something that they have looked for in the past. And now him being at the Seahawks, I could see him looking for that type of prototype. And he's exactly what they look for at the position. So Darius Robinson and Quinyon Mitchell are definitely two players that I think that helped himself a ton.
Yeah, can't knock the fit there. Obviously, Robinson for the Seahawks, they need pass rushing assistance, other pieces up front. And then Quinyon Mitchell, I mean, like you said, the Jags have cut Darius Williams. They've gone out and made a bunch of moves in the secondary. They're rebuilding that secondary. We'll see what they do in free agency, but certainly think they would be in the market for help at cornerback as well. And then other teams in that range who also need help at cornerback. The Bengals could be interested, maybe. The Rams, you have taking Nate Wiggins of Clemson. Steelers could be in the market for a cornerback. Dolphins just cut Xavien Howard. They could be in the market for a cornerback. Like you said, tough to see the cornerbacks, you know, kind of that tier of cornerbacks dropping too far, given how many teams in that range need help at that position. Here's what I want to finish up with. And we've talked on this show a lot about the guys in the top 10. And we look at different mock drafts, talk to different people. That's typically going to be quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle, maybe edge. Should make up most, if not all, of the top 10 in this draft. And so I think there's been a lot of discussion there. Want to hear a lot about those players, and we have. But from your perspective, let's say you're not drafting in the top 10. Let's say you're a fan of a team that has a pick later in the first round or picks in the second round. What positions are deepest in that range? And in let's say the bottom half of the first round and into round two, as you were doing your mock draft, what positions felt deepest for you? If you're a fan of one of those teams and you are hoping to land a certain spot, what do you think the deepest stock positions are?
It'll be offensive tackle and corner. I think we could see as many as 7 offensive tackles go in the first round, which is an astronomically high number. This offensive tackle class is really, really good. But outside of those top 4 or top 5, I should say, Joe Alt, Olu Fashanu, who we talked about already, Amarius Mims, Talis Fuaga is another name that definitely deserves to be in that tier, and Amarius Mims, as well as J.C. Latham. I mean, after that, you have guys like Kingsley Suamataihea of BYU, who tested really well at the combine. Jordan Morgan of Arizona is another name, and even Tyler Guyton of Oklahoma. So just reeled off 7 or 8 names right there that potentially could go inside of the top 35. And I'm looking at teams in the back end of the first round that need offensive tackle help. I think the Chiefs could be a candidate to draft somebody,
No question.
Depending on what happens with Donovan Smith and if they bring in a free agent. The Chiefs could be a team. The Arizona Cardinals at the beginning of the second round. The Washington Commanders are another team that obviously needs help at offensive tackle too. So there's a lot of teams inside of that 25 to 35 range that need offensive tackle help. And then another is corner. Cornerback, I think, is another position that we're going to see fly off of the board somewhere in that 15 to 35 range too, just because we don't have a Sauce Gardner, a Derek Stingley, or a Devin Witherspoon. There's not that top 5 to top 10 type of talent in this draft class. So I think it's going to be one of those situations of where teams are kind of waiting around to see where the first one goes. And then we're going to see a run on those guys in that 15 to 35 range.
Yeah, in those two positions where you can honestly never have enough players anyway. Like, I feel like at the end of the year, we're always like, okay, this team didn't have a left tackle and they got dominated, or, oh, this team was missing a cornerback and they got picked on in the postseason. So two spots where it's kind of like pitching in baseball, like you honestly can never have enough offensive tackles, never have enough cornerbacks. Actually, I lied. I have one more question for you, Jordan. I apologize. I want to ask you the same question I asked Field Yates a couple of weeks ago when he was on the show. If there is a player, and it could be a second rounder, it can be a first rounder, I just want someone from your perspective you would go to bat for, where you feel like you're ahead of the market, you're ahead of your peers on this player, you feel like he's being underrated or underappreciated, and 5 years from now, you are going to look so smart because you had this player head and shoulders above everyone else, above your peers. Is there a player who comes to mind for you? I know you just talked about, we talked about Darius Robinson. Is he that player? Is it someone else maybe?
Well, I don't know about looking smart. No, I'm kidding. One player I do love. And the NFL is so weird about drafting nickel corners. Like, it's a starting position in today's NFL, but
absolutely,
they don't get drafted until the third round for some reason. Like, the NFL, it feels like it's illegal to draft a corner, a nickel corner in the first or the second round for some reason. So the player that I'm going to highlight here, his name is Mike Samristil of Michigan. He's one player that I absolutely love in this draft class, and he's a little bit undersized. He's about 5'10", right around 195 pounds, but he was phenomenal at the combine. He actually was a wide receiver when he first got to Michigan, but he converted over. He's played outside, but I think he's going to be a nickel corner on the next level. He's very physical, really good ball skills. And every single big game that they had last year, he showed up in a huge way, whether it was Ohio State or both of the college football playoff games, which he had interceptions in all of those games. So Mike Samristil is one player that I absolutely love. And if you're looking for a player comp for him, he reminds me a lot of Mike Hilton in his prime, who was a really, really good player. In both of his stops. So he's one of those players that I think 5 years from now, everybody's going to be saying, like, man, how did he end up going in the third round? He should have went much higher.
I like that. You didn't give me like a top 15 pick where you're like, he's going to be better. You gave me a third round slot corner. I appreciate that. That is someone grinding the tape, someone who is making a big bet. And I agree with you. Slot corners or nickel corners should be taken higher. They are starting. They're playing 60, 70% of the snaps, and they can influence games. I mean, look at Trent McDuffie this year. Even though he wasn't drafted as a, you know, as a nickel corner, he played a ton in the slot and was phenomenal in that role for the Kansas City Chiefs. But Jordan, we'll have you on between now and 5 years from now so you can gloat about how smart you are. But until then, where can people check out the rest of your draft coverage?
So you can find me on Twitter, X, whatever you call it nowadays, at Jordan underscore Reed. That's J-O-R-D-A-N underscore R-E-I-D. No, I am not the Washington Commanders tight end, I promise. You can find me and all my work alongside my colleagues, Mel Kiper Jr., Matt Miller, as well as Phil Yates on ESPN+. Just find the NFL Draft tab. We have plenty of content that is coming out daily.
Mm-hmm. Plenty of mock drafts, plenty of draft content. Such a fun draft to talk about. And we will have you back on hopefully later on in the year as you're evaluating guys for the 2025 draft. But Jordan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you as always, Bill.
Thanks so much to Jordan Reed. Really liked having him on. Like I said, really been enjoying his work for us at ESPN. Check that out over on ESPN+. And really appreciate you listening to the show this week. We had two shows. Yesterday we had Stefania Bell talking about field surfaces, real nerd stuff. Love that. The beast, the machine that's being used to test field surfaces. I know not the most expected of topics around free agency, around the draft, but I thought a really cool thing. I love topics where, you know, like I said, everyone complains about it. Everyone talks about it. It's meaningful. But we don't really have solutions. And I think someone who is working on a solution outside of the NFL, and Stefania is reporting on that, really fascinating to me. So check that out. Hope you guys enjoyed today's draft talk with Jordan. Next week, I believe we're going to have some free agent stuff. We'll have some signings to talk about. Lots of players getting released this week as we're recording. Justin Simmons of the Broncos was released. So you'll know that as you listen to this. But a lot to discuss with player movement in the weeks to come. We'll be talking about that on the Bill Barnwell Show. So check it out next week.